First of all, this year there is something special, which here in Eretz Yisrael doesn't come that often. In Chutz Laaretz it's much more often, is Erev Tavshilin. Since Yontif coincides with Shabbos, or not coincides, but comes before Shabbos, so you have to be able to prepare for Shabbos on Yontif. And really, you can't prepare Stam from Yontif to Shabbos without an Erev Tavshilin. And the Rishonim say two different reasons, or Mara really says two different reasons for an Erev Tavshilin. One is for the sake of Yontif, and the other is for the sake of Shabbos. That, first of all, for the sake of Yontif. If you wouldn't start putting something away special for what's it called, for Shabbos, you may use up everything on Yontif and not have anything special for Shabbos. So that's for the sake of Shabbos. That you start preparing for Shabbos before Yontif, put away something, and that you remember on Yontif that you shouldn't eat everything good on Yontif, you should leave something for Shabbos. That's one idea. Second idea is for the sake of Yontif, that if you were allowed to prepare from Yontif to Shabbos, which min HaTorah, according to many, is mutter, you would, what's it called, end up preparing from Yontif to Chol also, which is for sure asr. So in order not to make that mistake, we start preparing for Shabbos before and just continue preparing, and that way people know that you can't prepare from Yontif to Chol, for sure not. So what do you do? On tomorrow, on Thursday, right, sometime before Shkia, you take a matzah or a roll, should be preferably be a whole thing, and it should be a kezias. So matzah fits that perfectly. And what? No. A matzah or a roll, that's first thing. That's in order they should be able to bake. And also something cooked, which normally the what's it called, the meaning was to take an egg, because an egg is usually a kibetza, which is not really 100% true, but that's the reason that people have the meaning to take an egg. But really, the egg is not the ikker. It's better to take something that you're actually cooking for Yontif, a pulki, something with a kezias of meat on it, meat, something that you're cooking for Yontif. So it's good to take a piece of meat, if you're making a roast, to make a piece of meat, taking a chicken, to take a what's it called, not a wing, but something that has at least a kezias of meat on it, and put it aside for what's it called, for Erev Tavshilin. There's a bracha you make, and a declaration that you have to say, and you have to understand that it's not a prayer, it's a declaration, so you have to know what you're saying, that basically, with this Eruv, you'll be permitted to do all the preparations that you need from Yontif to Shabbos. And then, what's it called, you have to prepare from Yontif to Shabbos in a time that, at least conceivably, you could have enjoyed that thing on Yontif. But you shouldn't prepare so late in the day on Friday that there's no time to have any enjoyment from that on Yontif. Right? Because otherwise some people hold it, then the Eruv Tavshilin wouldn't work. Because then it's Mamish and Isser Deraisa of preparing from Yontif to Shabbos. But in any case, you should prepare in a time that you would be able to have been a henna from that thing, minimally at least, on Yontif, and therefore don't wait to make all the preparations till the last second. And with that,
that's be like a Marco Bendrisai,
right? Right, yeah. It's just like be minimally edible, but not like 2 seconds before Shkia put something up that's totally raw and unedible, that it's not going to be at all even conceivably edible on Yontif.
That's have to be ready before Matana.
What?
Does that have to be ready before Matana?
No. Just before what?
Normally, one isn't that week.
Yeah, that doesn't make a difference. That's Stam. You can eat these kind of things you can eat for sure. These kind of things you can eat for sure. Okay, that's Eruv Tavshilin. I make an Eruv Tavshilin for everybody on the Moshav in case somebody forgets. So I don't take it myself. I get somebody who's not from my family, and I give them the Eruv to be Kona for everybody in the Moshav, and then we make the bracha and make the declaration. So if somebody forgot for the first time, they can rely on my Eruv. But if they forgot already more than once before, then they can't rely on that Eruv. Okay, so somebody who never forgot before can rely on this, the Eruv that we make, Stam. And if you don't want to make an Eruv yourself, right, then the chatchila, you have to let me know that you want me to have you in mind specifically for the Erev. But if you know that, and you know that I have in mind everybody, then mechor, that should help if you don't want to make your own Erev.
The yeshiva guys included?
The yeshiva guys included. Yeah, Mustami, you're included in the general Erev. And what are you guys cooking?
Is it only
what? No, it's everything that you have to do to any kind of thing. But if you're not going to cook, you don't make an Erev with a bracha for sure. You have to light candles.
Well,
changing clothes, those things you can do anyway. From Yontif to Shabbos, to get into Shabbos clothing? Yeah. Yeah, but there it's not really doing it only for Shabbos. You're putting it on already on Friday. Yeah, so that's probably not hachama, but other kinds of hachama that you'll do. Yeah, you need an Eruv, but you don't make a bracha on that Eruv.
Lighting candles.
Lighting candles, you don't make a bracha, but you need an Eruv to light candles. You guys are making cholent on Friday? Are you? Okay. But you need an Eruv tafshila, and you can rely on my Eruv tafshila. I'll have you all in mind. Okay.
Why doesn't it work more than once?
What?
Why doesn't it?
Because you're a posheya if you forgot once, and doesn't help for potion.
What?
It's not so posh. Some hold it for your whole life. If you forgot once, it's others hold that after three regalim, a new year, it's a new thing already. Okay, that's Erev Tavshila. Okay, there are no specific mitzvahs related to Shavuos. Not like shofar or lulav or matzah or something like that. There's no mitzvah in our Torah. And some say the reason for that is that you can't make a mitzvah that will personify the whole Torah. Because Shavuos represents Torah. Right? Pesach, you can have a mitzvah that represents Cheres. Sukkot, you can have a mitzvah that represents what's it called, Chesed or something. But Torah is Torah. You can't have a mitzvah that represents Torah. Torah is all-inclusive. So you can't have something specific that represents all of the Torah. So therefore, there's no mitzvahs specifically designated by the Torah, but they're minhagim. And Ashkenazim, we're Ashkenazim, so we have Ashkenazish and minhagim. Ashkenazim have five minhagim related to Shavuos. And the Vilna Gaon points out that the initials of those minhagim spell out the word acharis, end. As opposed to Torah and Klal Yisrael, who are called Reishis. We're called Reishis, like Bereishis Bar Elokim, Bishvil Yisrael Shenikraim Reishis, Reishis Tevuoso, Bishvil HaTorah Shenikris Reishis. Torah is also called Reishis. So Torah is called Reishis, and these Minhagim form the Acharis. Now Acharis has the idea is Torah is the foundation, the beginning. But what gives the Torah a good end, meaning it preserves it. It makes it work out good. Right, acharis le'ish shalom. Yesh acharis le'ish shalom means there's a good end to people of perfection and peace. So acharis means that the Torah may set the foundation, but how do you know it's going to continue and be preserved? So minhagim are the preservation of Torah and mitzvahs. Right, that's why minhagim are referred to as Torah simecha. They're the Torah of your mother, mother meaning Klal Yisrael. Right. Musar Avicha is the Musar, is the mitzvahs of God. He's the father. And the mother is Klal Yisrael. Minhagim make the mitzvahs more personal. Every Eda, every country, people individually, families, individuals have their own personal minhagim. It makes the Torah more personal. And that personal connection basically preserves the mitzvahs. In addition, minhagim are a protection to mitzvahs. They extend the mitzvah to a point where you're careful to keep the minig, and you surely keep the mitzvah. So the minig enhances. I always like to say the word minig has the same osios as hamogain, the shield, because the minhagim shield the mitzvahs. They're a protection. They're a shield. Also, however, if you rearrange the letters of minig, they can also spell gehenim. Because certain minhagim are gehenim. Right? Certain minhagim are not proper. People have minhagim that are not proper. The example I always like to give is that I had a balabas in Miami who I saw drive to shul on Shabbos and park a block away from the shul and walk the last block. So during the week, I went over to him and I said, you probably think there's a mitzvah to walk on Shabbos, so you park a block away so you could have the mitzvah of walking. But you should know there's a prohibition of driving on Shabbos. So parking a block away doesn't really take away the prohibition of driving. So he said, no, Rabbi, you don't understand. My father parked in that space. My grandfather parked in that space. It's a minig in our family. We always park there. So those kind of minhagim are gehenna. That's not. On the other hand, minhagim, even minhagim that are seemingly meaningless, and some minhagim, the source of them, when you look into them, are taka meaningless. There's a telefamous story of a shul where when they went around Hakafis for Hoshanas, so when they got to a certain part of the shul, everybody would bow down, you know, and they would go on. And this went on in this shul for years and years, and nobody ever really knew the reason why they had this minig of bowing. Finally, they asked some old-timer in the shul, now where did this minig come from? We never see it anywhere else. No one has this minig. So I'll tell you where it came from. He said, the shul used to be, before we renovated it, it used to have a much lower roof. And in this place, when you came here, if you didn't put your head down, you'd knock your head right on the roof. So whenever people came to that spot, they'd bow their head down so they would, what's it called, not hit their head on the roof. Years ago, we renovated the shul, but people remembered that their fathers, when they went around, bowed down in this place. They forgot the reason why. So the minhag became to bow your head down in this place from then on, even though the roof now was raised. But you shouldn't make light of even minhagim like that. The famous maisa with the Ramah. When the Ramah became the Rav in Krakow. So the first day he was there, it was in the winter, and he sees the shamus of the shul go over to a certain man, and he gave him a mazel tov. So he said, no, guy's got married, his son got married, bar mitzvah, what's the mazel tov? She said, well, the minig in this shul is that whenever a woman goes to the mikveh the night before, the shamus the next day gives gives the husband a mazel tov. The grandmas, I never heard such a crass minig in my life. He said, immediately we're stopping this minig here, no more, right? This is ridiculous. I've never heard such a thing in my life. And then the Ramah researched it, and he found out why they did that, why the Rav before had made such a minig. The mikveh in Krakow was, to say the least, not the most aesthetic place to go. The water was not heated, and in the winter it was freezing. So many women didn't go to the mikveh, but they said they did. So how could you possibly know? The mikveh lady was the shamus's wife. So they made up that if the woman really went to the mikveh, and she didn't just say she went, then the shamus would give a mazel tov to the person the next day, and he'd know that his wife really went to the mikveh. If he didn't get a mazel tov, he knew that if his wife said she went to the mikveh, she was lying. And it was a prevalent problem. It's the only way to control it.
It was too late
already. What? Yeah, I understand. But okay, at least this way they knew whatever. So, no, you understand. That was the deterrent. The wife was not going to lie anymore because she knew it would be found out. Right? It wasn't after the fact. It was a deterrent before the fact. So the Ramah said, I learned from that no matter how crazy the minig sounds, don't just be mevatel it, look into it. So, in any case, minhagim, even minhagi shrak, and my reshiva tell over the following ma'isa, I still can't find this medrash, right? But he said it exists, and they said the name of Rabbi Yisrael Chanan, so I assume there is such a medrash somewhere. Rabbi Yisrael Chanan was the Rav in Kovna. In Kovna, the minig was that whoever got married, the chuppah was in the courtyard of the shul. That was the minig. All chuppahs were in the courtyard of the shul. So he once got an invitation from a very wealthy man to come to be mesadel kedushin by his daughter. And the man said, but the chuppah is not going to be in the courtyard of the shul. I have a beautiful estate. I'm making the chuppah on my estate. So this one said, I wish you mazel tov. I can't come to the wedding. He said, why not? He said, because the minig in this city is that all chuppahs are in the courtyard of the shul, and I don't tamper with minhagim. So I said, that's ridiculous. The reason of such a minig, obviously, is because people don't have any place to make a chuppah, and this afforded everybody the ability to make a chuppah in the shul, in the courtyard of the shul. But I have a beautiful estate. I don't need the courtyard of the shul, so obviously it doesn't apply to me. It's ridiculous. So Rizal Chanan said, maybe, but I'm still not going to come because I won't tamper with the minhagim. And he quoted the following medrash, which again, I can't find anywhere, even on the Bar Ilan program. It doesn't exist in this nusach. That minhagi Yisrael is a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Elginas Egos Yoradati. There is medrashim that Klal Yisrael is compared to an Egos and whatever, but not minhagim. But supposedly there is a medrash somewhere that says that minhagim are compared to nuts. If you have a pile of nuts and you take one away, the whole pile falls down. If you start to tamper with minhagim, then the end result is going to be that you're going to, and even the one, what's it called, you're going to end up, the mitzvahs are also going to fall to the wayside. Because people cherish minhagim sometimes more than mitzvahs. Rabbi Wein says always, it's a shame that Lo Signov is part of the Aseret HaDibros. Had it been a minig, people would have kept it. But since it's in the Aseret HaDibros, when there was not a minig. The truth of that is, I once heard a story, and somebody swore to me it was true, that there was two brothers, Balei Tshuva, that were just, you know, becoming frum, and one of them woke up Shabbos morning and sees his brother shaving with a razor. Shabbos morning. So he screams out, he says, what are you doing? It's Sfira. So minhagim sometimes carry more weight than mitzvahs, and if the minig isn't, I remember in Miami, we had a cook in the yeshiva, it was high school. There were Hungarian cooks, and in Hungary, there was a minig on Pesach not to eat garlic. Some say because they used to water the garlic fields with beer. But garlic, and by them, garlic was like chametz. Garlic was like chametz. So here, they wouldn't be allowed to eat the garlic either during the year. They didn't eat garlic. In America, they didn't water garlic fields with beer anymore. So garlic was okay. It had hechsher for Pesach. I remember the cook once walked in to my Rebbe's home, and he sees them using garlic. He said, garlic, that's the worst chametz, garlic. If you could eat garlic, then you could eat bread. Right? If garlic you could eat already, he said, what's wrong with bread? So the minig becomes even more strong than the din. So you have to be very careful. The famous Maisa with the Chaim Brisker, that is learning with his Talmidim Friday night, and a man rushed in. He said, I have an emergency question, right? The Rav has to stop learning. I have to get the answer immediately. What happened? He said, my wife has the minig to make a lakshin kugel, a noodle kugel, every Friday with raisins. And this week, she served the kugel, and we realized she forgot to put the raisins in. So can we eat the kugel or not? So the Talmidim started, you know, under their breath to laugh, you know, the stupidest question they ever heard in their life. And the Reb Chaim said, wait, I have to look into it. So he gets up, goes to his Sfarim thing, and he starts to take out a Gemara above a Basra, then above a Kama, then a Ksubis, then he starts with an Eben Ho'ezer, a Choshen Mishpat, right, looks into each one for a little while, puts them all back, comes back to the table, he says, from what I see, it's okay to eat the kugel this week, but make sure your wife doesn't forget next week to put the raisins in. He leaves. You know, what's it called? The Talmidim say, you know, Brisker Torah is Brisker Torah, but, you know, where in the world did you see in Bava Basra, Bava Kabra, what's it called, raisins in Lakshin Kugel? He said, if I would have told this guy, that's the stupidest question I ever heard, go home and eat your kugel, right? Next week, his wife would have been preparing for Shabbos, and a little bit of pig oil would have fallen into the soup. And she'd say, go ask the Rav if we can eat the soup. He said, nah, last week we asked the question, it was stupid. This week is even a stupider question. What could be, if raisins are okay, pig oil surely is okay. So you don't tamper with people's minhagim, right? I once remember I had a woman call me Erev Pesach. You know what Erev Pesach is like. Frantic, right? She just realized that she didn't clean her screens in the room they're going to make the Seder. Could they sit in that room? So I wanted to say to her, if you don't plan on eating the screens, right, there's absolutely no problem. But I held myself back. And I told her, I said, look, it's a very serious problem. But b'dieved, you're allowed to eat in the room even though you didn't clean the screens, because we probably assume there's not a kazayas of chametz, you know, in the screens or whatever. I don't know what you... But for next year, when you start cleaning for Pesach, do the screens first so you don't forget them. And it was based on this, because if I would have told the woman like that, she would have said, fine, then we can have bread for Pesach too. If you don't have to clean the screens, then What's the rug we're eating bread? So that's the way people are. You know, minhagim are very, very important. If you start tampering minhagim, the end result will be that all the mitzvahs will fall. That's not so. We can get back to Rabbi Chaim, to the what's it called, the Rabbi Yisrael Chanan. So Rabbi Yisrael Chanan said, why are minhagim compared to nuts? Could be anything round. Apples, oranges. If you have a pile of anything round, you take one away, they all fall down. Why dafka nuts? He says, because sometimes nuts, you open up a nut and there's nothing inside. It's an empty nut. But if you take that nut away, it also makes all of them fall down. So even minhagim that are minhagi srak, they have no real importance to them. They're stam shtus. But if you take those away and tamper with them, they're also going to knock down all the other ones. So therefore you have to be very careful how you deal with people with minhagim. On the other hand, sometimes minhagim are really gehenim, and you have to break them down. I had another woman call me Erev Pesach in Miami. Here people call me good questions. But in Miami, I told my secretary, it was a few days before Pesach, it wasn't the Erev Pesach, but it was mamish in the heat. I told her, unless it's pikuach nefesh, I don't want to be disturbed. It was in the middle of preparing. I don't remember what it was. Sure enough, 5 minutes later, she buzzes me. The woman says it's a question of life and death. Okay? But I can't have no choice, so I took the call. The woman says, she sounded mamish frantic. She said, I just counted up the number of people coming to my Seder, and it's 13. So, like, I didn't catch on right away what exactly the problem was. I said, so? She said, what do you mean so? 13's an unlucky number. She said, what should I do? I said, if anybody backs out, invite somebody to take their place. The 13 is not an unlucky number, right? That's superstitious. It's Avodah Zarah. And what's it called? It's not a matter of life or death. You can have 13 people at your Seder. So sometimes minhagim, people think, or whatever, are totally off ground too. In any case, could be that's the reason why these are the minhagim. So what are the minhagim?
It's the same thing with the muscle with the nut. If you take away one nut from the pile, the thing will cycle down. But if you take one nut and try to add it to such a pyramid of nuts, it's also
going to
mess up
your pile. Okay, good. Right. If you add one that doesn't belong there, it's going to knock the whole thing down. If you take away one that belongs there, it'll knock it down. Okay, good. Good.
All right.
Sends the marshal. In any case. So what are the minhagim? Now, that's... I see this year a lot of Sfarim came out. There was a whole set, a thick sefer, just on one of the minhagim, of eating milchiks on Shuas. It's on Kirit Sefer. Somebody wrote a whole sefer on that 1 minute. A nice thick sefer. I think I bought it, in fact, even. It was. Yeah. Look, I can't imagine how a guy must have spent his entire year, right, just in what's it called? didn't look like a cheesy safer. In any case, so what are the minhagim? The first, let's go the easy ones first. The acharis, aleph, akdomus. The minig is, at least by Ashkenazim, before you lain, you say akdomus. Now, it's brought down that the real minig was that the Kohen said baruchu and the bracha, and then before they started laning, they said akdamos. There were opposition to that because it's a hefsik between the laning and the bracha. So then there was another minig that they said the first pasuk. B'chodesh ha-shlishi, b'yom hazeh b'midbar Sinai, then they said akdamos. Then some said that's not enough. It's only one pasuk. So then they said three psukim. Then they said, no, but akdamos is still a hefsik between the laning. So the minig became not to let the Kohen say the bracha, but before the Kohen says the bracha, you say akdamos. So there's no hefsik at all, and that's what we do. But there are places, I think, that taka start laning, or say three psukim, and say the akdamos before the laning, after the bracha. The Sfardim, I don't think, have this minig. They have a different minig. They read a ksuba, not by Kriyas HaKtorah, but by Musaf. They read a nusaf, a ksuba between God and the Jewish people, since the Matan Torah is like a marriage. So it said that, not a ksuba, tznoyim. They had a tznoyim, I think, and a ksuba. That the Rabban Shem promises this and this and this, and Klal Yisrael promised this and this. And that's a very cute thing. It's in the Sfardish and Machzorim. Beautiful tznoyim between the Rabban Shem and Klal Yisrael. We don't have that meaning. In any case, so that is akdamus. And Akdamas is, there's a famous story to do with Akdamas too, with the 10 tribes and the Bali Atosis who went there, whatever, you can read the story and tell stories. It's an interesting story. And the name of the Bali Atosis who made up this Akdamas is in the verses itself. And the Akdamas basically is, Akdamas means a preface. It's a preface to the Torah that the Rabbanu Shel Olam, the nations of the world come to us and they say, why don't you join us, be like us, and we'll be nice to you and we'll give you all kinds of rewards. And we tell them that no matter what you could give us is nothing what the Rabbanu Shel Olam compared to what the Rabbanu Shel Olam promised us and what we get from the Torah, and it speaks about what's going to be when Mashiach comes and the Suda of Shor HaBor and Leviyosan and the fact that the Rabbanu Shel Olam chose us from all the nations and he gave us the Torah, and that's how it ends, Umasar Lanu Araisa, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam gave us the Torah, and then we start the laning of Matan Torah. So that's Akdamos. That's the Aleph. The Ches is Cholov. The Minig is to eat Milchiks on Shavuos. And here again, there are many different Minhagim. In Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah brings down this Minig, and it's not like Kamat anybody does. The minig, according to the Ramah, is only in the daytime. At night, eat a regular fleishik meal. In the morning, you bring two challahs, lechem mishnah, and you start your meal with a entree of milk or soft cheese. Okay, and you make a motzi, kiddush, hamotzi, you eat milchiks. Then you take those breads away because you use them with milchiks. You change your tablecloth, change the silverware and the plates, bring everything new, and now you finish the meal with fleishiks. Now, normally you don't do that. Normally, you're allowed to eat milchiks before fleishiks. Some people have the minig to wash out their mouth, wash their hands, to wait a half an hour between. But in the Ikar Adin, all of that is not necessary. But what is necessary is to bench between the milchika meal and the fleishika meal. You don't eat it in the same meal. Here on Shavuos, the minig was not to be makbid on that, according to some opinions, and not to bench in between. To continue the meal, but with new bread. Why? That was a hint to the Shtei Alechem. On Shavuos, together with the Musaf Korban, you brought two loaves of chametz bread. You didn't bring on the Mizbeach. They went to the Kohanim, and they were an addition to the sacrifice. The two shlamim, shalmei tzibur, the only shlamim that's a public sacrifice in the whole year, was these shalmei tzibur, shekivsei atzeres, and they came with two loaves of bread, and a hint to those two loaves of bread is the fact that you had to change the breads from milchiks to fleishiks. I don't know anybody does that. That meaning, for some reason, we don't do. So we do something like that. In my house, we have a fleishika meal in the afternoon, but when we come home from shul, in the morning, we make kiddush and eat milchiks. So we have milchiks with one set of bread and then another meal with another set of bread later on with what's called fleishiks. The problem is that yontif, you need a fleishik meal. Mikra adin, basar v'yayin, is part of simchas yontif. So the meal should be a fleishik meal, not a milchik meal, unless you don't like meat. And you like milchiks better than meat, or you don't like meat, then you can be yotzei sudas yontif or Shabbos with milchiks. But if you like meat, then you really shouldn't use milchiks as a substitute for meat for a suda. So what some people do is that they have two fleishika meals, and they eat some milchiks, like we said, in the morning, what's it called, or late in the afternoon, they have some milchiks. Or sometimes people do it the opposite way. They have a milchika meal, and then after the meal, they nash some piece of salami or something to be yotzei eating fleishiks also. It's preferable, if you don't have a specific minig, to have two fleishik meals and to make the milchiks the way that I said. If you have a minig like that, and that's a minig was in your family for years, that you have only milchiks on Shavuos, some people have that, they only eat milchiks on Shavuos, right, in Chutzlar, it's all four meals, right, or you, what's it called, have a minig that in the daytime you eat milchiks, at night you eat fleishiks, or vice versa. Mislami, you can keep the minig, but it's not the best minig. The best thing is to have two regular meat meals, like every yontif, and somehow kvetch the milchiks in there somehow.
Do you need dafka to wash on bread when you do that kiddush thing in the morning?
What? We make it mamish, that's what we do. That's where we have a milchik meal. It's a small meal.
Right? This year, the Shavuos comes as Shabbos.
Yeah.
It's a little difficult to eat a meal.
meal in the afternoon. Ah, here. So, yeah, you have to eat a little bit earlier. Taka, this year you have to eat your lunch meal earlier on Friday. Before the, before the 10th hour.
Is it considered like a 2-day
yomtiv, or is it considered like... It's Sudas yomtiv, for sure. What is considered?
Like a 2-day yomtiv? We're not makbid on 2-day yomtiv, not eat late.
No, because that's because the ikur is the first day. Here's Shabbos. Shabbos is more chomer than yomtiv. So to eat on yomtiv and to avoid eating on Shabbos properly is not a proper thing. Yeah?
The problem with having milchit in the morning, if you have two places meals, and you have
milchit
in the morning for kiddush,
right?
Just with
mazonos. Yeah, that's also yotzi, I think. Again, you're not yotzi that ramah, but I'm not yotzi the ramah either 100% the same way either. So, close. Yeah, if you don't, you know, if you don't want to wash at that early meal, you just want to have mazonos. Yeah, it's also okay. What? So, it's only milchit. I could eat plesics at 7 o'clock in the morning. So that's milchiks. Why do we eat milchiks? So the reason that the Ramah brings down is for this, to hint to the shtei alechem. Others say because Torah is compared to milk. Right? Others say because Cholov in Gematria is 40, which is the 40 days of Matan Torah. Because Torah is compared to Dvash v'Cholov tachas l'shoneich. Others say because since you eat early in the morning, who could eat fleishiks early in the morning? So that many became to eat milchiks. There isn't this. Huh? Yeah, after staying up a whole night. The Mishnah Berurah says another reason. The Torah was given on Shabbos, and they got the laws of kashrus. They couldn't go in shecht, and they couldn't eat meat. So most they could do is eat cold fleishiks that day after the Torah was given. Another reason is that cold milchiks. Another reason they say is that has nothing to do with Torah, but the sixth day of Sivan, 80 years before Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu was put into the Nile. He was born on Zion Adar. His mother hid him for 3 months. That means the 3 months are up on the sixth day of Sivan. And in remembrance of the fact that he wouldn't nurse from the Egyptians, we drink milk. Another reason is that without the Torah, saying, Eretz Zavas Cholov Advash, milk should be also Kutzever Menachai. It comes from a living animal. Torah is Materit, so the fact that we have a Torah makes it we can drink milk. Okay, in any case, those are some of the reasons of Cholov. Next is Rus. We read Megillas Rus on Shavuos, both because Rus was the great-great-grandmother of David HaMelech, We need a machine to find out which machine is. What? For Rus? No, you can... For Chutz Minyan on Shabbos?
Do we have to go out?
If it's easy to do, you should do it. If not, you can be Yotzi and not a Yotzi. The Iker is to be at some Minyan on time. So Rus, we do for a few reasons. One is because we're also like Gerim. We also didn't have a Torah, Mekabel Torah. Rus is Mekabel Torah. Her name is hints of that. Rus is 606 in Gematria. She had originally 7 mitzvahs as a Goya, so altogether 613. So that was Rus. And David HaMelech was born and died on Shavuos. So what's it called? Also there's a connection between Shavuos and Rus. And Megillas Rus happened between Pesach and Shavuos. It says, right, between the Ktsir Chitim and the Ktsir Sa'orim, which was on Pesach. So for all those reasons, we read Rus. There's a lot of other reasons too, but those are the main reasons. Yeah?
Going back to the eating...
Milk? Yeah. Milk.
In Israel, most people, because they have 2 days yomtiv, the second day they eat only milk.
I hear. Could be by that time they're sick of eating. They're sick of eating meat. So then they have a heter to eat milk, so they just can't stomach the meat anymore. I can't imagine that, but in any case, that's that could be. There's a reason to that too.
This year, so if they daven a chutzim in, they miss out on a parsha.
Yeah, but you're not mechuyev to worry about the parasha, really. The parasha is it.
By
huh?
And he said they're
going
to do mincha right after and then the whole thing.
Okay. There's no chiyuv to do such a thing.
No? Okay, good.
The chiyuv is on the tzibur, not on a yochid. Right? I'm probably going to be traveling during that time, and I'm going to miss a parsha for sure. I'm going to hear one parsha twice, and one I'm going to miss for sure. I went to England before it's fixed up. It's fixed up by probably Matas Masi.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah?
So I'm probably going to go away before Matas. I'm not going to make it my crazy to make out the parsha. It's not the chayav.
So which one
should the chayav is on the tzibur, not on every yochid to hear every parsha. Well, which is better?
Yeah.
Like I said, there's no... Whichever one you'll be on time to.
It's no big deal because these guys going back to America for the summertime will just have heard one part of twice. There's not going to be missing anything.
It depends if you come back or not, right.
Only if you come back.
But they're going to miss Nosso. If they stay here, they're going to miss Nosso. They stay here, they're going to miss Nosso. What? You can miss all that, right. Yeah. Okay, that's Rus. Then Yerek. We decorate the house. It used to be the minig to bring trees into the house. But once that became a hallmark of the Goyim, to bring trees in your house for their holidays, it became awesome. That's what Vilna Gaon says. It used to be the minig to bring mamash a tree. Why? Because we're judged on fruit of the tree. So we what's it called? On Shavuos. What?
For a home of fruit tree?
A tree, yeah. Mamash a tree. But Goyim do it. They bring trees into their house. So you burn a tree. Everybody would go out and buy their tree. Imagine what's it called? Shavuos time. In Meir Shar, what's it called? Selling trees. Right. Right. So that we don't do anymore. We don't bring in trees. But you can bring in branches. Anything doesn't look like a tree. Right. So we bring flowers or whatever. But the reason is because we're judged on fruit of the tree. Other reasons are Har Sinai became a beautiful, luscious, decorated mountain when it was really a barren mountain to begin with. So in the Zecher of that, we bring greenery in. The Yaakov Emden says an interesting idea. He says that Al Simcha Siyanta, if you want to involve all your senses, so you bring aromatic flowers. According to this, you have to bring something that smells nice to make Simcha Siyanta. The only problem is, why don't you do it every Yanta? Simchas Yontif applies to every Yontif. So I was thinking, no, but Shavuos is different. Shavuos, first of all, the Gemara says, even if on other Yomim Tovim, according to some opinions, you don't have to eat. You could just learn all day. And the Biyot say Simchas Yontif with learning. But on Shavuos, you have to have a physical enjoyment too. So since Shavuos is extra special, the physical, you have to involve all your senses. But I was thinking more than that. By Matan Torah, it says every sense was involved. You could see what you normally could hear, and you could hear what you normally could see, that the entire being of the person was involved. So the Simchas Yontif of Shavuos has to be all your senses involved, more than other Yomim Tovim. But that's the reason for decorating the house, the shul, right? Either the Zecher Har Sinai, or because to remember that it's judged on fruit of the tree, Bikurim, it's a hint to the Bikurim, the bringing these things into the house. Okay.
Is the problem taken from public bushes?
Yeah, it's called stealing. The it's one of those minhagim that we try to... unless you have rishus, you can't take from public places and ruin their things. Right? You have to get permission. The another reason, it says by Moshe, the same thing. 80 years before Matan Torah, they put Moshe in the bulrushes. So a remembrance of that, we bring grass into the house, grasses. According to all these reasons, what you bring in is different. It's just to smell good, it's grass, fruit, branches, whatever, it's different things according to different menhagim. That's Yerek. And the last one is Tikkun Leil Shavuos, is that we stay up all night learning. And there's a special tikkun that is mentioned where you go through a crash course in all of Torah. You start with the first three psukim of every parsha, and the last three psukim, you finish the whole Torah Shevichsav, then the beginning of every Navi, and the end of every Sefer Navi, the beginning of every Sefer in Ksuvim in the end, and then the beginning of every, what's it called, Mishnayis, Masechta, the first Mishnah, the last Mishnah, and then a list of all Taryag Mitzvahs. By that time, it's already morning, and the special tefillah to say, and that you've gone through like a crash course of the entire Torah in one night. Okay. The most places, Hasidim usually do that, maybe Sfardim, I think, too. In the Litvisha Olam, the Yeshivisha Olam, they don't do that, they just learn regular. So once, the Vilna Gaon and the Dubna Magid were in the same place for Shavuos. And the Dubna Magid was a Talmud Chover of the Vilna Gaon. They were about the same age, but obviously the Vilna Gaon was much greater than the Dubna Magid. But the Dubna Magid, the Vilna Gaon used to call the Dubna Magid to give him Musar. So they were friends, to say. So the Vilna Gaon was learning Tikkun Leil Shavuos, the Minig, to go through what I just described for you. It's a Sefer, Tikkun Leil Shavuos. And the to be Yotzi, to tell you the truth, right? When I was in the yeshiva, I just learned plain. But, you know, you get older, who knows, maybe, you know, come to Shemayim, and they'll say, how come you didn't learn Tikkun Leil Shavuos? So, but to sit the whole night and do that is not our minig either. So what I do is, I do the first pasuk of Bereishis and the last pasuk of Divrei Hayomim. So that's, right? And first mitzvah and the last mitzvah, the first Maseches Brachos and the end of Nida, and pretty much Uktzin or whatever, and Yotzei minimally, the both things. So, in any case, so...
Is that a new minhag?
That's a new minhag, yeah. That's like I heard once, a female reform rabbi, who I like to call a rabbit, the, what's it called, said that in Reform Judaism, we are creating new traditions, which is an oxymoron. Right? So this is my new minhag. This is the, in any case, so the Vilna Gaon said to the Dubna Magid, the Dubna Magid was learning regular, so he went over to him, he said, how come, you know, you're not doing the minhag of, what's it called, Tikkun Leil Shavuos? Why are you learning regular? So the Dubna Magid said to the Vilna Gaon, I'll tell you a mashal, right? And answer it with a mashal, as was his usual thing. He said there once was a man who had a son-in-law who was not that bright and not that successful. And the son-in-law, you know, tried this business, another business, and he just couldn't make a parnasa. So the father-in-law, you know, had rachmanis on his daughter, and he called the son-in-law and he said, look, I want you to make a parnasa. I want you to find a business that you could be successful in. I'll put the investment in, whatever you need to get started, and you make a parnasa. So go and find a business that you think you could be successful in. The guy comes back a few weeks later, he says, I'd like to go into the carpet business. I think I spoke to people and they make a lot of money in carpets. I'd like to go into the carpet business. He said, okay. And he said, I've researched it and I need $2,000 to put down the rent and utilities, whatever, and stock. And I could get into business. I said, $2,000? I thought it was going to cost me tens of thousands of dollars to get you into a business. $2,000? Sounds great. Fine. Here's $2,000. I want to be your first customer. So as soon as you have your place and your stock, I want to come in and buy a rug. It's okay. So he comes to the store, nice store, and he has all these swatches of carpeting, you know, hanging in the window, right, all different kinds of carpeting. And he calls the father-in-law. He says, you could be my first customer. The father-in-law comes in. And he shows him, he says, here are the swatches, the carpeting, take your pick. Guy looks, he finds a beautiful, nice carpet, you know, sample, and he says, I think I'd like this carpet. He says, fine. Takes it off the chain, says, that'll be $2, please. He says, what are you talking about? He said, well, that's what I saw. All these people have these carpet stores, and they have all these things hanging or whatever, and I buy them for 25 cents, and I sell them for $2, I'll be rich in no time. He said, you idiot. He said, these are only samples. You have to have carpet in your, what's it called, in your stock. No wonder it only costs you $2,000. You don't have any carpet? He said, no, I have these things. He said, this is what I'm selling. So the Dubna Magid said like this. He said, if you have stock in the back, then the samples make sense. But if you don't have any stock, only the samples is ridiculous. He says, you're the Vilna Gaon. You know the whole Torah. So tonight you can sit and speak about samples. I don't have anything in the back room. I'm going to sit here tonight and talk about samples. Ridiculous. Therefore, I'll sit and learn regular. You can learn the samples tonight. Okay. Chag Sameach.